a gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points, bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention. Attention.
Government is an emergency.
We speak. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Greetings, greetings, hello. I just sat in the chair and Stacy's asking me questions. I'm ready to go on the air. We're missing boxes. This is the Dutch Jones radio program, trying to do a good show here on April, what is today, the 19th? 18th, 2011, April 18th, 2011. We didn't do a Friday show. Boy, that was a training break. No, that's not why. What happened was we went to Sequoia National Park and we got stuck up there. And we were up in like 8 feet of snow. That's not why we were stuck. They have road construction. We couldn't get down in time to do the show. So, but other than that, we did what we could. No, wait, that was Saturday. I'm all confused here. Friday, we didn't do it. We didn't do the show because we had to go get the youngin, the youngerling. I am so sorry, guys. I am frazzled. We've been working hard all day today, so thus the not-so-smooth, rinky-dink intro. We are trying to get things under control here at the church at Kaweah. It is just overgrowth, overgrowth, overgrowth. We've had 180% of our rainfall, of our expected rainfall. Like I said, the snow up in the mountains is still 8 feet deep at the top. Nothing's open up there. And down here, everything's just growing like mad. I mean, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people working today just on weed and grass control. Stacy's trying to set up here. She's not in the room yet. She's setting the computer up next to me. But Stacy was pulling weeds by hand, sweeping, hoeing. Lou was weed whacking. I and two other folks were mowing. And we lost a mower today. I don't know what happened. It happened just before I decided to take a break. But it's just growing, growing, growing. I hope our garden grows this good when we ever get around to planting it. Hey, dog, stop playing with the microphone. What's that wobbling for? My microphone's wobbling like 20 degrees. What do you put under there? Anything under there?
No, there's nothing under
there. Okay. That was weird. Well, let's see. Let's start back with Friday. Let's see if I can jog my memory. Friday, we had to go get the little bug. That was fun. Saturday, we went to Sequoia National Park. That's what it was. Let me get this in order. Those of you that care about the Dutch Jones experience, the reason I'm only telling you this, because there's some neat things that deal with what we do. They had it's an open week. Easter week, you can go for free to the national parks. It's normally $30 a carload to get in. We went in, and they had the Junior Ranger program, and Anthea wanted to do that. Lou didn't. Lou said, do I get a gun? Because they said you get a badge. And they said, well, no, you don't get a gun. So he goes, well, I'm not doing it. So he just hung around. Well, Anthea went through it. And, of course, we went through it with her. And the law enforcement part was funny. They have law enforcement rangers that are also search and rescue / firemen. You know, they're mostly law enforcement. And I said, well, if you're search and rescue, why do you carry a gun? I'm just messing with the guy. And he goes, sir, bad people go camping too, you know. And then I was going to say, well, then why can't I carry my gun in the park? Which you can, but they still have the signs up. This is my point, and I'm getting to it. They still have signs up everywhere that say no guns allowed in the park, and then the signs changed. It doesn't say no guns allowed in the park. It says discharging a firearm within the park is prohibited and no hunting. But they don't want to let you know that you can now carry a firearm in the park to protect your camp or your life or property, usually from two-legged predators. You know, which was funny, you know, so they're showing, you know, they had tasers and firearms and the whole deal. At least they didn't have a SWAT team. As far as I know, they didn't have a Sequoia National Park SWAT team. The other thing I noticed is that a large percentage of the park's employees, whether they're cleaning latrines or they're law enforcement, interpretive people. What are you looking at, Lou? Something wrong? Is your mic? Do you have your microphone hooked in? Is that yours? Here, let's see. No, that's mommy's microphone.
What?
You got mommy's. Hook up your microphone, Lou. No, I turned it off already. We're not allowing you to talk. You're in timeout. You're in talking on the radio timeout, remember? I'm just kidding. But most of the employees were veterans, Gulf War veterans. So I was talking to one of them, and they said what they get is they get percentage point advantages, so many hiring point advantages. Yeah, there you go now, Lou. There you are. Here, let's slide your mic so you can talk if you have to. And they're all like saying, hey, man, you got, you know, if you're a vet, you got to do this. You should get come up here and work. Stop breathing in the microphone, Lou. And so I noticed there's a lot of vets up there, which was strange. So it's kind of nice to know I've got, hopefully, they're the good kind of vets all working behind me. They all work in the park. They're kind of isolated in the park. They're snowed in the winter. And there are these great little two Filipino college girls that at the one snack shop slash gift shop slash hardware store, I guess, at the top, because everything else was closed. And no restaurants, no laundromat, no showers, nothing. Everything's closed because it's under 6 to 8 feet of snow. And for some reason I got talking about faith and religion, and I said, well, where do you guys go to church? And they said, well, we don't. We've been looking for a church. Where do you live? And I said, well, we're only about 40 miles away, but unfortunately it's through, like, you know, 3 hours of winding road. Well, it wasn't that long. About an hour and a half of winding road. It's all mountain road with construction and everything. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. And I said, so, you know, you could come to Three Rivers, Cahuilla, go to church with us, but it's too far for them. They don't even have a place for the employees to worship up there in the federal park. Think about that. These people are living there over the winter to maintain the what little bit of a skeleton crew they have, and they don't offer them. So I looked up online. They used to have church services up there for them, but they don't anymore. They pulled it out. No chaplain anymore. They used to meet in one of the halls in the museum, and they could. So they don't do that anymore. So now they've got little Filipino girls. Young women, ladies, in their 20s. When you say they were in their 20s?
About 20s.
Not no older than, less than 30, but older than 20. They have no place to go to church up there. I invited them here and told them to come to Cahuilla. We're the only church on North Fork, but I doubt they'll be able to make it because the construction up there is incredible. They're doing something in that park. 4 years ago, I drove through the park, and there was a section of road about 3 miles long that they were working on that was on the edge of a cliff way high up, I don't know, maybe 6,000 feet. And they're still working on the same section of road. Still working on the same section of road. And you can see where they're putting breastworks in, and they're going to do like a, you know, they're widening it to hang off the side of the cliff and, you know, a little bridge type thing wrapping around. And I'm like, what is taking them so long? And there's huge trucks going in and out of there. There's huge amounts of base camp set up farther down the mountain where there's tons and tons of concrete and asphalt and gravel being processed. But the road hasn't, from 4 years ago when I went up there, it hasn't moved. They haven't gotten any farther along than 4 years ago when I went up there. So something's going on up there that they're building. And, of course, you know, it arises questions, are they building an underground, you know, in the mountain type thing? And they could be, for all I know. And tons of construction contractors everywhere. All the campgrounds are full of them. So if you can't find a campsite in one of, you know, in Sequoia National Park, it's because it's being occupied. But fortunately, they were all American workers. So you thought next I'd say, and they were all Chinese. No, they were all American redneck-looking steel workers and concrete workers. And everyone that we stopped and talked to, you know, they just, you know, just seemed like regular American folks. And, Dutch, are you going to do an hour-long show? I'm going to do 2 hours today. The second hour, we just had a question in the chat room if we're going to do 2 hours today. Second hour, we're going to talk about some border issues. Minuteman called me today. I took a break from, you know, murdering grass and weeds, and he told me some outrageous stories that we need to share with people. And I don't want to just relay them to you. I want you guys to hear them in his own words. So that'll be good. So. So we'll be doing that in the second hour. We'll be doing a second hour today. And I'm going to need help filling this first hour, guys. I told you I've been working all day. I've got some stuff I want to share with you. I want to talk a little bit about the TA-50 things. I keep calling it TA-50. I'm sorry. LBE that we've got going. There's Stacy shipping those out.
Yeah,
We have one left. We can get more, but we have one left. So for a $25 donation, you can get that. We've got one left on top of the three reserved for us. Hundreds of veterans working for the Park Service and lesbians. A lot of lesbians. And then the road construction was hinky. I don't know what's going on there. What was the other thing? The firearms. They're masking over the fact that you can take firearms in the park. In fact, at the visitor center when you go there. So we'll see. No, just got a gun with a slash through it. So it's Southern California. He was a hunter, and you know, guy had a big old mountain beard and everything. He didn't look like your typical park employee. He looked like he'd be a mountain man. Looked like he'd trade you some beaver pelts for some chewing tobacco or something. Well, he was going through the management system for the Bears, and Anthony had to sit through the class, so we sat through it too. And what was neat about it was I asked the typical, you know, questions trying to catch him, you know, conservation, you know, ridiculous stuff. I said, so are you relocating your bears? And he goes, no, we don't do that anymore. We don't relocate problem bears because, I'm getting ahead of myself here. He goes, because all we're doing is shifting the problem around. He goes, we just destroy them. We shoot them. And he goes, I'm a hunter, and I've hunted bear. And he goes, I don't enjoy destroying a problem bear, but if it has to be done, it has to be done. What they're doing is, you know, when Yogi goes nuts, they're taking 12 gauges with rubber slugs, shooting them in the fanny and screaming at them. And if after a while they get used to it, they get very brave and they get dangerous, then they shoot them with regular rifles, regular slugs or double-aught buck, or they trap them and euthanize them. Now, one of the funny things is they try trapping them and tagging bears so that they can study them, too. It's like hand-in-hand animal management plus animal science, you know, research. And I said, so here's what happens. The bear will go into a trap, get the food. They'll use a jab stick to tranquilize them. It'll be down for about 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours. And then they'll start to come through, and they monitor them. Well, what they do is they tattoo their lip with this god-awful torture device that looks like a pair of vice grips with a tattoo needles on the end. They put a tag in their ear, so they get their ear pierced, their lip tattooed. They put a radio transmitter on them. They get their temperature taken in the bear's rear end. They take hair samples. They do all this kind of stuff. They give them, you know, they lubricate their eyes and wrap their eyes up. And then most of the bears, they hate this. They just think this is just incredibly annoying, and they don't want anything to do with it, so they never come back again. He goes, but there are some bears that will deliberately get trapped 7 or 8 times because they enjoy the bait, because it's usually like apple mash or something, and they kind of enjoy the drug, you know, which I thought was funny. And I could just imagine this. I had this image of, and I think it was a Far Side cartoon, where the bear comes home with his ear tagged, his lip tattooed. He's groggy. He's got the transmitter on, and he's trying to explain to his wife that it was really park rangers. And she's looking at him going, no, you were out with the boys again last night. Or it's kind of like a human being abducted by aliens. But they said some of the bears enjoy the process and don't mind it, and those are the ones they have to destroy. They just keep coming back. And it came down to it, which was interesting, because idiots feed them. The more you feed the bears, they say that human food is like a drug to the bear. Just another example of how when they try to overmanage these things, how terrible it gets. I asked him, and this is the question that I'm trying to get to. I said, so what are these bears? He says, well, they're American black bears. And that's what they are. And I said, oh, they're not eastern brown bears? He goes, no, they look brown, some of them, but they're not eastern brown bears. But they are native to the mountains of the region. And I said, well, what about the grizzlies? And he started talking about the grizzlies. He said, the last grizzly was killed in 1920 in Sequoia National Park. There was one spotted in 1923 or 24, but that was way up by Morro Rock, and nobody ever saw it again. And I said, so pretty much the hunters wiped out the grizzly bears because they were predatory and all that. He goes, well, actually, they're not even native to the mountains. They're a lowland bear. The grizzly bears were down on the valley floor, and they came up here when things got rough, when there were too many farmers down there. It pushed them up here. And I said, so because you guys are all big on reinstating, you know, species to their natural habitat, are you guys going to relocate grizzly bears that you can find up north here? And he's like, absolutely not. I go, why? He goes, grizzly bears are dangerous to human life, and we just don't want to do it. So I'm thinking here, meanwhile, on the other side of the coin, they're not giving water to farmers to grow crops so they can keep transplanted salmon and fish that aren't even native to our rivers here. This guy was a cool guy. I mean, I didn't want to ambush him too much, but I brought that up to him. He's like, yeah, it doesn't make much sense, does it? And I go, yeah. I go, well, let's, you know, but those of you that live up in, what is it, Montana, Wyoming area where they're putting the wolves back into Yellowstone. Yeah, that's real good. But that was one thing I learned. It was fascinating. I learned a lot. And when you guys come out to visit us, you guys have got to go to the park and watch the stuff. There was a bear management woman with the same last. She could have been Warland's sister, had the same last name as Warland's last name. That's why, I don't know, I sent you a little email asking you if you had a sister that worked in the park. But they show you how great the bears are, and they're not up right now. They weren't awake. They're still hibernating because so much snow. But they are up there. They do have, I said, when's the last time somebody got seriously hurt by a bear? And they didn't want to say, but they will destroy your vehicle. They showed several vehicles, pictures of vehicles that somebody would leave a candy bar in or something. They will peel your car open like a banana. And anybody who thinks you can climb a tree, I get it all the time. Well, you just need to climb a tree. These bears climb a tree faster than Luke can run across a field. They run like 30 miles an hour on a field anyway. And they scurry up the trees like it was nothing. It's the grizzly that can't climb a tree. The Africana, what did they call them? I forgot the name, but the Latin name for them. But the American black bear will just scurry right up a tree. Will just scurry up a tree. And once they realize that you will drop your food and run, it becomes a game to them. And they will eat you. The bear management guy said black bears will hunt you to eat you. He goes, don't let anybody tell you that they're more afraid of you than you are of them. He goes, the goal is to make them afraid of you by making noise and being as large as you can. It's funny, they were shooting them with rubber slugs. I would never shoot anything with a rubber slug. I'd be shooting them with a real slug. But the bear management part of the presentation was really cool. The Swiftwater rescue part was great. We went through that and they talked about that. The rivers up here kill people all the time. They just, I don't know what it is with city folk. They see a river and they go, ooh, hot tub, and they jump in, or baby pool. They don't realize just the hydraulics involved, how much foot pounds per square inch are going to be put on you. In fact, the one place where all this was going on was called Hospital Rock, and there was an Indian village there going back hundreds of years with about 600 people in it, and the Indian name for it literally meant people go under. People go under. And I asked, well, why do they call it that? And the archaeologist says, because a lot of the Indians drown in the river. So it's not just city folk. Indians drown in the river, too. But there was a lot of pictoglyphs there, a nice little day-use site, and all kinds of crafts and stuff for the kids. It was really, really nice. But here's what the weird thing was. I talked to the lady who was putting it on, who was, of course, a lesbian. And it's just weird to me that they hire lesbians and veterans for the Park Service. It just seemed to be the preponderance of people. Well, the volunteers weren't hired. They're separate. They were mostly old people that were the volunteers, senior citizens, God bless them. And I always said, well, you know, you're putting this whole thing on, but there's nobody here. She goes, yeah, we're schools. The price of gasoline kept schools away, kept all these people away, kept all kinds of stuff away. And it's just bizarre they put this big event on. They didn't even charge to enter, and nobody was there because of the price of gas. It's affecting everything. Minuteman is asking, what did the ranger say about carrying a gun to protect yourself from a bear? I asked him about that when I didn't ask him. Everybody went to go do something, and I said, so what about protecting yourself in your campsite with a handgun or a rifle or something? Well, we don't recommend that. We recommend bear spray. And they sell bear spray all over up there. The capsaicin spray, which, by the way, everybody keeps saying, well, I'm going to get bear spray. It doesn't work as good on people. It's only 0.05% or 0.5% capsaicin. And it's not going to work on humans. It's because bears have a much more sensitive olfactory snooter. Their smeller is more sensitive than a human. It's akin to a dog. And so the spray. So they recommended the spray. They don't want guns in the park at all, even though you can carry them. We actually went into the park to go gold panning. We brought our gold panning stuff along, but it was just everything was frozen. And the places that the river wasn't frozen were way at the bottom of a canyon, and I'm not ready for that yet. Not going to hike down. A huge number of European tourists. European tourists is what we saw. We didn't see a lot of Americans there because Americans don't have any money, and the euro is so much stronger they can afford the. What are we paying now? $4.29 a gallon up here?
I think it was $4.49.
$4.49 a gallon for gas up here outside the park. So that's what they got to pay. Because once you go into the park, it's like another 120 miles the next gas station. Somebody has to fill up in Three Rivers. So the economy is really hurting the parks. And I asked them what's going to be open. They said, we don't know. I said, when's the museum open? They go, we have no idea. We don't know what the budget cuts, if they're going to open it or not. And Stacy keeps saying volunteers. And that's right. I think the only reason anything was open was volunteers that are all the retired people that live in Visalia, Three Rivers on this side. And I don't think the state parks are going to be able to handle this budget, you know, because there's just not generating enough funds. I don't know how they're going to keep them open. And they're so overly managed. They are so micromanaged in the parks where you can go. You have to have permits to go everywhere, the trails you need permits for. I mean, you can come to Sequoia and you can hike up to Mount Whitney. It's a seven-day hike from the parking lot over here to go to Mount Whitney, the highest place in the lower 48 states. But you need all kinds of permits, huge reservations in advance. It's insane. The only reason we went, honestly, is it's free until, like, next Sunday. Mm-hmm. And we went Saturday, and we went again today. Grandma came up, and we went in just for... We went to Hospital Rock again. Oh, and the reason they call it Hospital Rock, even though it's been a living site for indigenous peoples for several hundred years, back in the late 50s, two ranchers were up there hunting, and one of them fell and broke his leg. And he got him as far as this Indian village that was Mono Indians and Paiute Indians and all that. And the shamans there, this is funny. They said they took care of him. They treated him, and his leg virtually healed itself. Well, okay, I just got knocked off. Are you still on?
Yeah.
Okay, guys, I got knocked off, but Lou's still on, so that's good. So I can't see the chat room anymore.
Not me neither.
Okay, let's see what happens to Lou if he's next. I'm not even going to try to get back in. I don't want to use up the bandwidth. But what they did is they took gymsum weed, which is a huge hallucinogenic, and made a salve and rubbed it into his leg. And I'm thinking at that point, and then they used bear fat and some other stuff, and they kept it compacted. Sure, they gave him hallucinogenics for 2 or 3 weeks. He could walk on a broken leg. He had no problem. So, you know, it's not any major miracle or anything that these shaman did. But it was funny because the archaeologist said, yeah, gymsum weed's everywhere around here, and it's what the young kids use, and if you do it wrong, you die. So you have to have a Native American there. Now, okay, it's starting to let me back in. I don't know. So it may... So is everybody... I hope everybody can hear me. Let me check here. Hello, I see everybody again. I think our computers are just going nuts. I know Chris from New Jersey was going to send us some memory. And that might help. That might be a good thing. So anyway, Anthea went through all of this, and now she's got a hat and a little plastic badge saying she's a junior ranger, and if she does more. It was funny because I was really bugging him today, and we went and said, okay, now that we have this badge, can I collect fees? Can I go like 200 yards down from the main gate and tell everybody to give me $2 to get into the park today? Can I go out and force legislative regulations here in the park? And they're like, no, sir, it's just for your daughter. And I'm like, oh, come on. You know, I got this. Does this hat and badge carry any official power? And they're like, no. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Sergeant Slade, for letting me know you can still hear me. But I highly encourage, come up here, work it in, you know, a training, work in a weekend, and go to the park. Because I really don't know how much longer they're going to be able to keep it open. I mean, when it completely falls apart, we'll go whenever we want. You know, we'll go knock over to the guard shack with a semi and just go flying in and do whatever we want. But the one thought remains in my head that law enforcement ranger said, bad people go camping too. Okay, and I was going to try and get to it here in the first half hour. The whole reason we went to the park, and I had so much fun with the other stuff, I dragged it on and I apologize. It's not very malicious sounding, is it? I sound more like a tour guide or a spokesperson for the federal park system. We went up there to look at the caves. But you can't get to any of the public caves right now because you're under 8 feet of snow in the entrances. But so what we did is the next best thing is we bought a $20 video on the caves of this area. And that's what I really want to talk about for the next half hour is how to utilize a cave and how to locate a cave and some of the amazing caves that are up here. One of the caves, Crystal Cave, they say is only 3 to 4 miles long. That's the one that they'll let you walk around about a half mile loop, and then the rest you have to arrange for private tours. And basically, the advanced tours, you have to be a contortionist and weigh about 104 pounds to get in. But some of these caves are gigantic up here. that, like I said, Crystal Cave, the one behind us, 8 miles, 12, let's say 12 to 14 miles up the road, is 4 miles long that they know of, and then there's unexplored portions of it. But there are several caves up here that are 20, 30 miles long. There's one cave on the video that we got, and maybe we can burn copies of that. We'll have to check to see, and I can send it out to people and then just something cool on caves. There's one cave that they know that's like 23 miles long, and then there's a whole other system behind it that they suspect is there because of the terrain features, the sinkholes that are all up there. And several of these caves are like 100-foot drops. The entrance, these animals have been falling for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, and there's a big pile of bones, and you have to rappel into it. So it's almost impossible to get into, but then it goes around for 10, 20, 30 miles. And the neat thing about them is the majority of them stay about 58 degrees. There's fresh water in them. There's fresh air going through them because they have multiple openings, but the openings are so narrow and hard to find, and almost every single one of these caves, with the exception of Crystal Cave, is like a 5 to 7 mile hike up the sides of cliffs. You could see people coming a long way off. So you're picking up what I'm talking about here? Caves and subterranean is such a great way to stash and to... are you playing music?
No.
Okay. To stash stuff and for cover. And I'm thinking Tora Bora, you know, all that kind of stuff. When we were up there on those hillsides, you know, where we could go, and looking down, like when we were stuck in traffic while they were building the secret UN command post, where they stopped us so we couldn't go through, it just looked like Afghanistan. It looked like the stuff from Restrepo. The terrain behind us is very forgiving to the defender. And we're going to talk a little bit more about those caves and stuff when I come back. After this, you're listening to Stronghold Radio coming to you from Camp Kuya.
Our country was a baby and the redcoats had their way. It was he who had a party tossing tea in Boston Bay. It was he who braved the winter in the days of Valley Forge. Fighting side by side together with a fella named of George.
God in freedom.
Started growing and the wagons headed west. When a country called for pioneers, his name led all the rest. What a figure in his rawhide coat and hat made of raccoon. Wonder what there was about him made you think of Dan O'Boone. Mess of thinking, he's the Lincoln of the day. If we're fixing for a tussle, it's his muscle all the way. If we need a handsome fella so the ladies' hearts can throb, there's a Yankee Doodle Dandy, always handy for the job.
Crash does come when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest. The last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.dutchjones.info. Okay. And we're back. You're listening to Stronghold Radio, coming to you from Camp Kawea in the Commonwealth of Kawea, Central California, Sierra Nevada Mountains, the foothills, actually, about 1,000 feet. Nice 70-degree temperatures today. Everything's green, except where we sprayed, and that's brown. The ground is covered with everything from miner's lettuce to different flowers to weeds to thistle, all kinds of stickers, that's right. Stacy's been pulling stickers. We're talking about the mountains where we live. And you don't have to necessarily be in mountains. I mean, caves can exist anywhere. I've seen them in the desert, you know, things like that. But I want to talk about caves a little bit. That's what we're talking about and how you can use them for the resistance. And right out of the box, Warland. By the way, Warland, it still says that Dutch Jones 1 is signed in. And we don't know who that is. Is that you, Lou?
No.
Yeah, we got to get Dutch Jones 1 signed out so Lou can get control of the chat room if we need to. Not really an issue as long as we don't have some idiot in here. But thanks for tuning in and tuning in Monday through Friday. Remember, Tuesdays and Thursdays we have our special guests. Tuesdays is Code 20 with Steve Klein, and Thursdays is Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. And as always, tune in around 4 o'clock when you can. Well, right at 4 o'clock, 4 p.m. Pacific time, an hour before this show comes on, for The Voice of Jefferson, where we're still working the kinks out, technically. It's not easy doing a show. If everybody else would do a show, we'd be packed, but here it's, if it wasn't, what I'm trying to say here, forgive me, please forgive me, my verbal stumblings, if it were easy, everybody'd be doing it, and it's not easy, and I don't want to make it sound easy. It's actually very hard work, and I couldn't do it without Lou's help, and as far as being able to carry a conversation with myself for 2 hours when I do, it's because I've been doing this for 30 years. So, they're saying try it now, Lou. I think he may have signed out. So, yeah, it's gone now. Great. Thank you, Warland. But if you'd like to do a show, we'll do our best to help you get on the air here. And as long as it's Christian-based and it's resistance-based or holy cause-based, we'll let you on. As simple as that, just trying to expand. Well, we're talking about caves, and right there, Warren says, I'm not so sure about the wisdom of being in a cave system in an earthquake country. Well, what exactly is earthquake country? That's a great comment to make there, if not a statement. The faults in this area are not all that unstable, and the caves that we're talking about that are in this video have not been altered in hundreds of years. Now, granted, all it takes is one big quake, but if a quake is going to be that big, it doesn't matter if you're on top of the ground or below the ground, it's going to be devastating. And in a full-on toe-to-toe conflict, and you're in plain sight, I'd rather be in the caves. Great places to cache and stash. Although I wouldn't want to live in one 24/7, I'm not Vietnamese. I don't know how they did it during the war, but it worked for them. You can create your own tunnels and shore them up, and you can shore up caves. These caves here that I'm talking about are in marble. They are carved over thousands of years since the Great Flood by water going through the marble, and they are incredibly strong. Incredibly strong. It's kind of like similar to the marble quarries, the stone quarries underneath Jerusalem. Large, huge open voids that maintain and still hold up the massive city above it because it's in marble. And stay awake, Lou. I don't know why you're tired. You didn't do anything today. I'm going to pull on your whiskers. And
You did everything today.
Yeah. At least you didn't break a lawnmower today. That's all I'm happy about. Somebody else broke the lawnmower.
Wait.
Yeah, wait. Yeah, he just started using the driving lawnmower. Let's see, drive it off a cliff or something. As long as it doesn't explode. I hate that in the movies whenever they drive off a cliff and the car explodes with a lawnmower.
Or
a cartoon. It's, you know. And then the things in the caves we were talking about, before the break I typed in, except for the critters in the caves. Once humans start to go in caves and they do things like build fires and things, the critters leave. There are very few critters that live naturally in caves. The bats are not considered cave inhabitants. They go there to sleep and hide. And because of them, they bring in guano and dead insects in their poop, So other insects wandered in, and they devour and eat the guano. But once you're in there and you smoke them out, they'll go somewhere else. Are you following here? Once the white man invades the cave, or non-white man, it drives a lot of the critters out. And nothing in the caves up here were poisonous. Although I hate spiders. I cannot stand spiders. But they're in there, but they're not poisonous. They showed us nothing that suggested there were like black widows or brown recluse, which could cause more of a problem. And the snakes don't like it because they're cold. They're cooler. So you have like little tiny insects here and there, things that feed on the back guano, things like that. But once you start building fires and stuff in these caves and occupying these caves, the bats aren't going to come back. So that's just a point there. The earthquake issue, if the cave's clean on the floor, there's not a lot of debris, fine. Now, one of the things that happened, I was talking to one of the curators of Crystal Cave up here. Now, I've told you before that I've spoken with octogenarian guys, 80-year-old and more dudes, that were living in these caves up here during the Great Depression. They came up to work the Triple C, the people that the Civilian Communist Corps or something like that, and they came up here to build, you know, outhouses and campsites and all kinds of stuff. You know, for Roosevelt, because they didn't have jobs anywhere, so they separated them from their families and brought them up here. They lived in the caves. And I said, you know, have you found any evidence that shows that makes sense? It's funny that she had never heard this. She says, when you get back in the deeper caves, we'll find, like, chicken bones or beer cans with stalagmites or stalagnites. Stalags. Let's just call them stalags because I'm cool. I don't remember which one's which. Building up with, and we'll find, like, modern stuff underneath them. And I'm just like, wow, you know, well, that's from these guys. You know, there's all kinds of folks in there. Yeah, and that's a good point, Sergeant Slade, and I'm going to get to that. And so people have been living in them, and, you know, they bring in, you know, canned foods, and it's nice and cool, and they have all the water they need. And it's they're usually on hillsides. They're great defensive positions. Sergeant Slade says you might want to make a small fire to preheat the roof. Bingo. I'm glad you mentioned that because I forgot about that. I've done a lot of camping in Canyonlands, Four Corners region, and every once in a while you hear a story about somebody going under a rock overhang, building a white man fire, going to sleep behind that white man fire. In the middle of the night, the rock face erupts and projectiles come flying, or even just a collapse, and it crushes the camper. Now what they're doing is that there's moisture inside the rocks, there's fissures in the rock, and when you heat it super fast with a big fire, it will cause exfoliation off the face of the rock. Great point, Sergeant Slade. I'm glad you remembered that, because I forgot all about it. It's one of the things I was taught in outdoor education not to do. So you want to make a smaller fire to preheat it, and you'll start to see the rock expand and it'll let you know where it's going to fall off of. So, but we're dealing with marble here. I think it would take a greater amount of heat as well. Dirty air. You need to bring a canary, too, IC Freedom says. The only caves I would go in are the ones that have clean air blowing through them. There's Hurricane Crawl up here, which has a wind just gushing out of it at the top of this mountain. I mean, it's literally, the trees outside of it are swaying. I would not go into any cave that has stagnant air, period. You want the ones that are breathing and moving and that kind of stuff. And the way you test it, if you don't have a canary, is you just go in a little bit at a time, and you pay attention to what your body's doing. You don't just penetrate the cave all the way to the back and to the right and left. And that's the same rule with mines. There can be bad air. And bad air isn't necessarily poisonous gas. It's air that has an oxygen content around 10% or less. And it's going to kill you. You'll suffocate because you don't have enough oxygen. Lou, do I have to keep hitting you to wake you up?
Yes.
Stay awake. Come on. Stay awake. Come on. You can do this. Get this boy some coffee, stat. And an IV. We need two IVs of coffee.
Oh.
Teenage boys going to sleep. Does that hurt? It sounds worse than it is. Just slapping them on the back, trying to keep them awake. There's so much to deal with safety with caves, but I think that it far outweighs the risk, especially here where we are. Are you slapping me now? Because of the remote areas. In Mineral King, write that down, Mineral King. Google Mineral King, and there's caves all over up there. The way these cavers were talking to me at this place, any place there's marble and water, you're going to find caves. And they say that they honestly believe that they've only found a small, less than 10 to 15% of the caves in this park, in this region. So if there's marble up there, which there's marble down here by us, that means there's caves in all these mountains I'm looking at around here. Although it would be nice to go to Crystal Cave, and get back up there. But I might not make it that far. So we need to find operational K's within, you know, quick sprinting distance of here. Worland says, tie a scumminess to a long rope and let the scumminess find out if there's bad air. Yeah, lower them in. Sergeant Slade says, use a torch like Rambo to find the airflow on another exit. And that's going to do two things. That's going to find you the oxygen level. If your torch goes out, that means there's not enough oxygen to support fire, so it's probably not enough oxygen to support a human being. So that's a good point there, too. You might want to bring a candle in. Now, you may find explosive gases and things in these caves. I'm no expert. So the next thing I would recommend is, if you've got a place like we do, there's cave tours. Go on them. Ask these questions. You know, what's safe, what's not. And some of these things, I mean, I wouldn't want to fight in one. I can't even imagine firing a weapon in one. But they're so displeasing to get to that I don't think anybody's going to mess with you. Now, that doesn't mean they've got all these really high-tech weapons now where they can close down the mouth of a cave or do an air burst bomb in there and kill you. But they can kill you in a building, too. So tactically and strategically, you know, you can argue back and forth, go, oh, caves are really stupid. Well, so is a basement. So is a mountaintop. You know, there's advantages and disadvantages to everything. But what I'm talking about is your support staff, your hospitals, your supplies, your intelligence gathering people, your communication stuff. Put it in caves. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, I think it was Sergeant Slade or somebody, and I apologize because I lost that conversation. Go back into the caves and go back in history and you'll see the use of caves. The War of Federal Aggression. A lot of caves, a lot of dugouts were used. And if you don't have a cave naturally, you can make a cave. Crystal Caves is well known and will draw gangs from the big cities, Twinkle Toes says. That's true, there is that risk. But it's also very defendable. But maybe you give them Crystal Cave and you locate the... these caves, there's like Soldier's Cave. My favorite one was the Hawaiian Crawl because of the wind just flying through it. And it's way up on the side. It's at the base of Morro Rock. Those of you that know the area. Twinkle Toes, I think, is the only one in the room that knows what I'm talking about. Maybe Minuteman. You can see that it's very defendable, except from, you know, somebody dropping a nuclear bomb on it, maybe. And they go 5, 6. Well, no, let's see. The one, Hurricane Crawl, goes down probably several hundred feet from its entrance of elevation, and it's just a maze. And they say you can get lost in it. You literally, they say if you got lost in it, it would take days for somebody to find you or if you got injured. And so it hasn't even entirely been mapped out. And the number of people that know about that cave, well, anybody who bought the video, like I do, but they don't really tell you where it is on the video. The only reason I know is I could tell by the video they were shooting where it was because I see Morro Rock. I can see it. But only an elite class of cavers ever come to this area. You know, and honestly, most people aren't going to go more than a few hundred feet inside a cave. And some of these, they have very, very small openings. I'm talking barely bigger than a manhole. And they open up into huge cathedral-sized spaces. Now, I did a little Googling, and there's, I think in the western United States, the largest number of caves is right here in our back door. And, you know, Missouri and places like that have got caves. Any place there's subterranean water... The difference is that everybody else has their caves in limestone. The caves here are in marble. Limestone may not be as safe. Limestone may not be as viable, but that's just the way it is. Minuteman is saying, Arizona Citizens Militia has 3 mines/caves that they use as forward observation bases and other purposes. Exactly. Now, we've got tons of mines. There are mines all over up here. Mines are a little different. Since they're man-made, they're a little more fallible, you know. They're not erosion made, so take a look at the floor before you go into a mine. There's a lot of debris on the floor. I don't recommend going in without all kinds of training and rescue equipment, and safety equipment rather. But why? Why not utilize these things? And if you can't get to a cave, you can't get to a mine, why not start making stuff like it? Now, I could go on and on about how people in cities should, you know, tell their neighbors they're building a pool and then drop a container and then say, oh, I couldn't afford the pool and bury it back up. You know, try and get away with that. But do what you can. Sergeant Slade saying again, a point that I brought up earlier, fresh water. The springs coming out of these caves, you know, unless you have a lot of human debris in there, you know, if you manage your cave well, the water's going to be a perpetual supply of water, which is key in a lot of these states and for survival. You know, here we've got the rivers and stuff, but if you think about it, if you get caved in and you got to stay there for a season, especially some of these caves that are up higher where the snow is, like Mineral King, you spend the winter in a cave, you got fresh water coming and going. There's one cave up on South Fork. I can't remember the name of it. I need to watch the video like 100 times again. And it's over half of, well, that's the part they know of. The part they know of is above water, and then the cave ends, and then there's water all the way to the roof. And they, one guy got, what was it, half a mile? He scuba'd in half a mile, and then they pulled him out, and that's as far as he could get because of the visibility. But he says the walls are wider than he could reach, and he could stand up in them, but they're full of water. So, you know, there's water in there. Moreland's saying that Jefferson Territory is diamond mines. That's right, diamond mines. Oklahoma's got salt mines. Double Eagle Salt Mine down in Oklahoma. There are mines all over the place that have been industrially built up, and what's going to happen when the collapse comes? No pun intended. The collapse of society. You know, where, what are these mines going to be used for? There's... Okay, let's get back to urban survival. Every city I've lived in has had a subterranean portion of it. Greeley, Colorado had tunnels all over the place that were put there to sneak alcohol in. Up until after Prohibition, it was dry long before and dry long after. It didn't become you couldn't sell alcohol in Greeley, Colorado until the 70s, so there were tunnels everywhere. Twinkle Toes, a cave woman's work is never done. Yeah. Yep, especially if you're going to be digging. But there's a lot of opportunities to go below ground. Why did the Vietnamese have such an advantage over us? I mean, we could discuss geopolitical, philosophical, supply lines, all that, but the huge, huge reason they won is that they could disappear into their caves and their tunnels. I'll say tunnels. From what I've read and researched, there are a lot of caves over there too, and they incorporated tunnels into it too. Calico, California is just riddled with mines and caves. And that's where the first militia I belonged to, that was our retreat. People go, why are you going out in the middle of the desert? There was always water in them, and in 120-degree heat in July, you get into this cave a couple hundred feet back, and it was 68, 70 degrees. And water trickling through. Heavy, hard water, mineral, but it's still water. And so you've got it. What you can do is you can just, there are websites, just Google caves in my area and put in a zip code and you can find caves. Now, practice with the caves that are commercially exploited. Get to know these skills. A lot of them are going to adapt to other stuff as mountaineering, rappelling, search and rescue. What a great other survival hobby to have. Wake up, Lou. Wake up, Lou. Give me the vice grip, Stace, and heat them up, please. Hanford has tunnels under the city that were used by the Chinese locals. I've heard that, too, Twinkle Toes, another town in the next county over. There's always somebody putting tunnels somewhere for some reason. University of Northern Colorado, where I took some classes briefly, there were steam tunnels all under there, and all this little punkzoids when I was a teenager would sneak into those steam tunnels. We were the first steampunks before it was famous. And we would go into there. Our school in Eaton, Colorado, had tunnels underneath it, connecting the different buildings that were built in the 1800s. I don't know why they put them there. The janitor was kind of weird, and he had a lot of extra time, but we found civil defense stores. We found bomb shelters. Man has been going underground ever since he stopped being underground. It's just a great way to secure your stuff. And it goes hand in hand with the mining stuff we were talking about. I'm going to keep you awake, Lou. Lou, sit up. Put your feet down. Sit up. You got to learn to stay awake. Pretend you're on guard duty. Put your feet down on the floor. Yes, stay awake just to keep the computer from resetting. Our new computer keeps trying to reset with an update. I don't know what's going on there. But safety is everything. It's not cost efficient to build your own tunnel as it is to go locate a cave somewhere. Plus, if you build a tunnel around your house, you know, you're not really working a good bug-out plan, are you? You know, granted, it would be cool if they come in, they burn down your house, they don't find your body, they go, huh? 3 months later, you crawl out from underneath because you've been living off your supply of food. That's awesome. So that might be a plan. Doing it now is a little hard the way they watch everything. So unless you have a house that was built in the 1950s, you know, unless you're, what was his name? The vice president under... What was the vice president under Bush, the last Bush? The guy who shot the guy in the face?
Ronald Reagan.
Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney's house. Remember what they did? All his neighbors kept hearing explosions as they were building a huge war room under his house. You know, it's going to be hard to get away with that. If they can't even do it in secrecy, what makes you think you can? So maybe if you've got some, even just buying some land. Okay, here's another idea that I came up with. My brother in Colorado, he's buying land. It's going to be $3,000 for like 4 acres in Colorado. Yeah, that's right. That's how cheap it is. He can't afford to put a house on it, so I've told him this. I said, go dig holes. Go under. Get a container for $4,000, bury it. Reinforce it. Put your food in there. You know, camouflage the entrance. Keep all your supplies there underground. And then when the time comes, you can build a log cabin on top of it. Live in a lean-to. Do what you got to do.
Or you can always put a fifth wheel on it.
Well, you have one. Yeah, but keep your stuff underground. That's the point. But you keep your stuff underground. Yeah, you come in later with a fifth wheel or a camper and live on top of it. You look like some guy who has barely nothing, but underground you got everything.
There you go.
So, and you don't even need those big containers. And the containers, as far as I know, maybe you guys know more about it. Out here, they're expensive. You can get a damaged one for $1,000, a damaged C-Tran container. But somebody with a little bit of ability could put a trench in, build a plywood structure that's reinforced, seal it, pour concrete around it in a foundational form, and cover it with 2 to 3 feet of dirt. Nobody will ever know it's there unless you drive a semi over it. And if you're in the mountains, nobody's going to be driving a semi over it. Are you getting my point here? Subterranean, I just think, is the way to go, and it's something that I've really overlooked. We don't have any subterranean stuff here, and I'm not just saying that to dissuade anybody, but it's true. There's just, you know, I'm looking at the 55-gallon drums full of food that I have, and I'm like, man, I don't even want to dig the hole to do that. But you know what I did today? I had the pastor teach me how to use the backhoe. So for the price of some diesel fuel and some lubrication oils to keep that thing running, I can dig a trench somewhere up here, and even if it's just small, subterranean, even to hide it out. Think about how much space is it going to take to hide enough food for a week for you and your family. And you find a cave somewhere or a niche somewhere in a rock. I'm telling you, Stace, we got to explore all this up here, every one of these overhangs. Because people just haven't done it. We white folks are lazy. And I'm looking out here out these windows. Within a day's walking distance, I bet there are caves all around us. Caves all around us. Those of you that live in cities, there's maybe that's the only way to do your bug out plan is underground. Of course, you're going to have these. What is it? Chuds. Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers. You got to look out for chuds when you go underground. I think they live in caves and all that kind of stuff. So you know, maybe I'm overreaching. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe it is unsafe, but. I'm really encouraging you guys to look at going down underground as a possibility, especially if we're going to be facing overwhelming forces. Let them move over us. They think they've won, and then we pop up from the ground like a phoenix, you know, out of the ashes with all of our gear intact and communications intact because we didn't lose it. We secured it underground, so when they did their EMP, nothing happened. You know, we protected it. We made sure that it was secure. And maybe that's the next level of survivalism. We become troglodytes and go underground. That's the proper term. I think that's what it was. The troglodytes lived underground. And I can't find a place in America that doesn't have a mine or a cave structure in it. You have to find it. You have to locate it, and you have to utilize it and exploit it. And if you can't get there, you have to start thinking about reutilizing what you have to maybe put your stuff underground. Twinkle Toes Slee Stacks from The Land That Time Forgot. Is that what it's called? Yeah, remember that? The Slee Stacks? You know, Will and Holly, they went over the waterfall. The little Chewbacca, pre-Chewbacca guy.
Oh.
What was that called? They did a remake of it with Will Ferrell, and it wasn't that funny. It was okay, but it was nuts. Yeah, I can't remember that. Land of the Lost. Yeah, Land of the Lost, Slee Stacks. You know, there's stuff out there. Find yourself a good Masonic temple and burrow underneath it. That was another thing that secret societies, how do they remain secret? They go underground. Everybody says, I'm going off the grid or I'm going underground. I mean, if we really want to be the American Underground, maybe we need to start being realistic about it. I, for one, am terrified of the thought. I'm going to be honest with you. The thought of living in a cave and stuff terrifies me, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to explore it. I'm not going to try and get Lou to do it. Lou, go in there and tell me if it's safe. And contrary to popular belief, bears don't really like caves that much. They like burrowed out trees and little dens that they dig under things, especially here. Grizzlies, if you have grizzlies where you live, they might be in a cave, but not always. But even a good old rock overhang properly camouflaged could sustain you and your family and hide your stuff for a long time. I can think of two or three overhangs within a 20-minute walk where I'm at already. That would be easy to grab some of the available stone around and create something that nobody from a distance would even see. Think about like the Anasazi Indians and the cliff dwellers of the American Southwest and the Four Corners region, up on a hillside, bricked in with Hosta Butte construction. That's what they call it, Hosta Butte. 18 to 24 inches thick, you know, small arms fire is not going to get through it. And, and if you do it right, people won't even notice it. People won't even see it. You know, you don't go up there with a bunch of cinder blocks and paint it bright red, obviously, but I just think it's an option that we need to explore, and it's something that really hit my head when I saw that video and went, you know, I got to share this with these folks. These caves are everywhere up here. We're probably sitting on one right now because I was out there. This building that we're in, that we live in here, is on just solid rock. You have another option other than a cave. It's just that it's cold in the winter. It depends. The caves up here are the same temperature year-round. And it's probably because of the water supplies and the insulation, but the caves are between 50 and 68 degrees up here. Now, the caves up in Mineral King, they're always 35 degrees, whether it's 40 below outside or 70 outside. Some caves, depending on where they are, the nature of the rock, so yeah, it may be cold and you got to explore it. But if you're in Arizona and you're in a cave in the winter, it's going to stay 50 degrees. Pretty weird stuff, you know, unless you're wet. So we're going to be back after the break. We're going to have Minuteman on after the break, and he's going to tell us a few things that he did on the border or saw, observed, and new things that the enemy's using down there, and I want to talk about it. We'll be back after the break on Stronghold Radio. We're going to be on Liberty Tree Radio. We'll be right back. By so many busy businessmen are snapping from the stress, and the rest of us are jogging from depression. Has it ever once occurred to you or ever crossed your mind that the problems of this nation are created by design? That no matter what they tell you, there's another bottom line, intertwined between the patterns of deception. Since our eyes first opened and our ears began to hear, they've been herding us like cattle through our fantasies and fears. They move us through illusion and confusion of the mind, and by changing subtle meanings to the words between the lines. It's the news behind us and the methods you can use. It's a blueprint and the plan they all rely on. And it's written in the protocols, learned elders of Zion. They'll tell you it's a forgery, they'll tell you it's a fake. The anti-Semite wrote it for the money that he'd make. It's been slanderized and demonized and labeled racist hate by the same who stake a claim to its creation. Now I'm not here to try to argue if it's false or if it's true, if the author was a commie or the likes of you know who. What I'm really trying to tell you, head across to you, is it's a blueprint to the downfall of our nation. There's a cause to the chaos that's occurring in the land. There's a road to communism, there's a global master plan. You'll never read about it in a book of history, cause it's been hidden from the masses to control their destiny. It's the news behind the news and the methods that they use. It's the blueprint and the plan they all rely on. And it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Thank you.
an anti-Jewish publication. So if you ever get a chance to get a copy of your own, just remember not to ever leave it lying on your own. Cause you never know just where their snoopy news reporters roam. That might even be a friend or close relation. It's the cause to the chaos that's occurring in the land. It's the source of communism. It's the global master plan. You'll never read about it in a book of history, cause it's been hidden from the masses to control our destiny. It's the news behind the news and the methods that they use. It's a blueprint and the plan they all rely on. And it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. And it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Go ahead and wail at that wall.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in
there. Put out all points buttons. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
Attention!
The government is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers.
What kind of radio show is this?
Set back down and grab. It's time for
Dutch Jones radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Yowza. Okay, we're live right now. It is Monday, April 18. Am I too hot? I can't see the meter. No, it looks good. April 18, 2011 on this Rinky Dink radio show coming to you live from Camp Kawea via Stronghold Radio, which is our little concern here where we bring you stuff Monday through Friday through Ustream. And then we also jump on in our second hour, which would be this hour you're listening to, on the Liberty Tree Radio, and also brought to you from Scotty 38 over CB Channel 2 in the Finger Lakes region of New York. And I'm told we're on Minuteman Radio, we're on Militia Radio, we're on. I get emails from people saying they're hearing me all over the place. So, if you're hearing us, thank you very much for tuning in. If you're carrying us, like Liberty Tree Radio is, thank you very, very much. We appreciate getting the message out, especially our Tuesday and Thursday shows. I'm not exactly the best radio announcer in the world, as I've been declared rinky dink by the judiciary of Arizona in the official record. But we do bring you some good stuff on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And if you don't like what I'm saying, I encourage you to tune in then. Tuesdays we have Captain Steve Klein, Marine Corps retired, a cell warfare specialist who talks about Islam and a little bit about what we can do to organize against any enemy. Mostly his specialty is Islam. He's not an expert. He's just very, very, very interested in that threat. And then on Thursday evenings right here, on all these concerned stations that are listening in, you can hear Pastor Warren Mark Campbell from the church at Kawea talking about practical Christianity. And those of you that didn't hear last Thursday's, man, you got to get the archive that Olima put up. It was on women of the cause, biblically and historically, examples of great women and what they can do and what their role is. And it's just insane how women today have been perverted into this role when the great examples are there. JL from the Bible. JL from the Bible puts a tent peg right through that Invader King's skull with one swipe. I love it. John Wayne 30-06 is in there and saying you guys need to check out some of the fallout from Japan. Oh, boy. I tell you what, it's just getting worse and worse, isn't it? Now they're sending in robots. And now, I haven't checked the internet sites lately because, of course, I've been really busy, but it's out there. It's in our milk here in California. It's going to be in our crops when we grow up. My brother in Colorado is getting nailed. Like right here, according to, and I don't know a whole lot about it, but the Geiger counter's here anywhere from 9 to 25. In Colorado, where my brother is, right between Loveland and Fort Collins, it's coming in like, you know, 75 rads, and it's just insane. I mean, people can do whole shows on just the stupidity of this thing that's going on over there. But we're not going to talk about that. If you're out there, Minuteman, go ahead and call in when you like. Let me plug in the phone. I have plugged in the phone number for Minuteman to call in. Hopefully you have it. I'm not going to give it out because every time I give out the phone number for somebody to call in, the wrong person calls in and I have to dissuade. It always happens to Steve Klein. Somebody calls me right when Steve Klein's supposed to call in. So Minuteman, if you would call in, I want to talk to you about the deployment of the Border Patrol Auxiliary that you took part in this last week and some of the great things that you guys are doing, some of the scary things that he has to talk about. So as he's reaching for his phone, I'm waiting. Make sure you turn that up over there. No, she can turn it up over there. Or you can plug in over there. That's fine, too. Stacy wants to make sure. I didn't tell Stacy what you're going to talk about, by the way, Minuteman. It's pretty bad. If you have kids in the room, you might want to plug their ears on some of the stuff that these scumbags from Mexico are doing to get drugs into this country.
And the government and everything's protecting them.
Yeah, and it's just terrible. There's some good news, but for a bad reason. Immigration... illegal aliens coming in has been slow because of the economy. It's the economy, stupid. Well, Minuteman hasn't called in yet. Is my phone on? Oh, who could that be? I like my new song. You're live on the air, Minuteman.
I'm waiting for the secret code to call in.
My ears are made of chocolate. Okay, Minuteman, now why don't you tell us generally where you went. Who you went with, and what you saw. And just, I'm going to give you the microphone like I do anyone that calls in. You can just share with us.
Sure. I'm with two different groups. I'm with the Border Patrol Auxiliary and MCCI, which is the Minuteman Corps of California.
Okay.
We operate out of what we call Camp Vigilance down. It's about 40 miles, about 50 miles east of San Diego. Primarily the area of the border that we operate on is from Campo down to the O'Neill Valley. And depending on whether there's more traffic or more what we call IAs, illegal aliens coming across, is where we try to concentrate our manpower to be as effective as possible. At times we go down there, we'll have different firearms training to help people be proficient and safe in the manner that they use whatever firearms we're training on. Normally Saturday morning before we go out and do that, we'll have a briefing. One of our members, retired police officer, good rank and good training that he does, don't want to go further than that, is part of Homeland Security, but he also has people that are higher up in Homeland Security as to what they do. In our briefing, what he shared, to the level that the drug people are going to now, recently, within the last 2 months, there was a mother coming across the border with her baby, and to the border inspection people, something looked odd or out of place there. Had her go into a secondary inspection place, and in that secondary inspection, they found baby was dead. The chest had been cut open, the body cavity cleared out, and was filled with heroin and then sewed back up. So that's pretty, you know, horrendous, just that. But then even more recently, during spring break, there were three women, college-age women and two males that went down to Tijuana to to, you know, party and have some beer and, you know, whatever else they were going to do down there. It was just going down for a fun party evening or whatever. In whatever bar they were in, one of the women, whether it was because it was too smoked over, she just wanted to go out and get a breath of fresh air, told her friends, I'm going to go outside for a little bit, I'll be back. Mm-hmm. Went outside into the parking lot or whatever, and mm-hmm. after about 20 minutes, they were getting a little concerned. One of the guys went out and looked all around the area and couldn't see her. At that point, since it was spring break, she might have found another one of her friends driving by and, you know, hooked up with them or whatever to, you know, do some partying with them. When it came time, after about an hour and a half later, for them to leave, they looked for her one more time, did her, then hopped in their car to head up to the Tijuana border crossing area. When they were up in the Tijuana border crossing area, for the people that aren't familiar with that, this is like 15 lanes wide, and at some point it narrows down where some of the lanes merge, but it's basically about 15 lanes to help the traffic get through the border crossing, you know, more effectively. And even then, you know, if you're going in a high traffic season, once you get there, it can take you 45 minutes to an hour and a half to get through that border crossing.
Mm-hmm.
They saw the other woman there's in another car several lanes over with another woman and two guys, but they didn't recognize any of those people, but she was, they didn't recognize her. So as they went up to the border area for the inspection thing, they told the inspector that was inspecting their car that their girlfriend's in another car over there, and with someone they didn't go down so they could please check to make sure that she's all right. When that particular car got up to the border inspection area, they had the car go over to a secondary inspection, had the people get out of the car, and this lady did not get out of the car. Mm-hmm. They went over and checked her, and she was deceased. On taking her body out of the car from the bar, apparently she was soon after that killed. She was gutted. Her body cavity was opened up, filled with heroin, sewn back up, and her eyelids sewn open, so that it looked like, not that she was sleeping, but looked like she was just a passenger sitting in the car. You know, this is about as hideous as it gets to take, you know, a college kid, kill them, gut them, and then fill the body cavity with heroin to drive it up here.
Now, they're
to an now, it's somewhat to do on a different side note, on a traffic accident that happened down there where
let's wait before we get to that. Hang on there a minute, man. I got to put comments in. This is just showing how far they have sunken to get heroin across into this country. That they're finding, you know, a woman skins her own, basically, guts it. Or we don't even know if it was her baby, to be honest. Stuffs it full of hair, brings it across. Now they're out on a predatory nature looking for American students. And skinning them, gutting them, filling them full of heroin, sewing their eyes open, and trying checkpoints. I mean, what you're sharing with us is a quantum leap forward in the violence, the deviousness, I'm very seldom at a loss for words. When you told me this earlier, when I was out on the field, I felt like sitting down. I felt like somebody had punched me in the gut when you told me even the first story about the baby. And now that young women are being used literally as pack mules by killing them and packing them full of drugs. I mean, and this isn't in the media anywhere. I haven't heard this except from you, and I have no doubt that it's happening.
Nope. Well, border supervisor and some of the BP people we talked with said that general IA traffic coming across is down. And a lot of times they would use these people as pack mules to bring, you know, stuff across, whether it's marijuana or whatever else they'd bring across. Mm-hmm. I guess with the traffic being down because of the economy, they're getting more desperate as far as ways to get this across. And like you said, this is as heinous, as satanic, as evil as I can imagine. I guess it can get worse. I'd hate to think of what it is. But that they would kill, you know, whether it was killed or the baby died naturally or whatever, but to use a dead baby. And then, like you said, predatory-wise, to look for any available opportunity to literally kill someone where their life means nothing, like kind of like in the Far East, and then use them to try to smuggle drugs across.
And how many parents the season of spring break are letting their kids go to Mexico here from California? Their college students, even their high school students, I've heard horrible stories. And this is just another thing. Anyone that goes to Mexico for any reason is insane, as far as I'm concerned, that would allow themselves to be put at risk like this. They're savages.
Part of one of the problem things, like you and I have talked about off the air, with the stuff from Arizona and Janet Napolitano, purposely says, the borders have been safer than they've ever been before, and this, that, and the other. And yet there's YouTube stuff of where, they've stuck literally beheaded people's heads on posts and stuff like that, displayed their bodies, and some of the drug war stuff that goes on down there looks like something from a Bonnie and Clyde movie.
Oh,
yet now Latino says, that it's safer than it's ever been before, which is an absolute lie. And, you probably never hear this story that I shared with you that Homeland Security is aware of, BP's aware of, but they're covering it up news-wise because, if people did hear this and were aware of it, my God, we've got to seal the border. We've got to get National Guard down there. We need to do something. They wouldn't let this amnesty or this other...
This is so hot that even Fox won't touch it, and they're, I'm literally at a loss for words on this one. And Sergeant Slade said, sounds like our army is fighting in the wrong place. We need to clean sweep Mexico. Yeah, we need to shut it down, isolate it. Mass graves with hundreds and hundreds of people in them over the weekend. If you guys saw that in the news, they're letting that leak out. But these cases of humans being stuffed with drugs to smuggle across, no, that's not going to make it.
Right. And the thing about it is, we can do a wonderful job of securing the border of Afghanistan or Iraq or, wherever else we go overseas, but somehow we just, and you look at what Israel does with their borders. They're very effective on, doing a very good job of keeping their borders sealed and, trying to keep their country intact. I'm sorry, the greatest nation supposedly on earth, we can't secure our southern border. Supposedly, you and I both know we can't if the effort was put into it. But that for political purposes, it's allowed to be, like a sieve.
Yeah. Yeah, anybody that's played any kind of strategic game, 1,000 men, armed men, I could shut down that border. I'd set up reactionary forces, I'd have posts, I'd have wire, it wouldn't even cost that much. And
Some of the stuff, like with what the group I'm affiliated with does, and having done some operational stuff with ACM, there are people that are trying to make an effect, and it's like when Sheriff Babu on the news quite a bit about the drug traffic stuff, his officers being shot. If the word was allowed to get out, even if they don't allow the National Guard, if they would allow the sheriffs
regular
to
county
do
law
effectively what they can do, if you'd allow them to deputize citizens from around the area, whatever,
like our pyres,
it could be stopped. It's just, politically, with the federal government, they don't, for whatever reason they choose, they don't want to effectively stop this. They'd
let's look at this.
Logically,
we've got beheadings, we've got mass graves, we've got huge slave labor, we have horrible, horrible torture videos, we have barbarism beyond anything I've ever seen in history. All in one spot. Well, I shouldn't say that. Barbarism that I've seen throughout history, all isolated into one area. It kind of makes the Spanish Inquisition look nice. And it's all right here on the border. People stuffing human beings that they've kidnapped. I'd hate to think what they did to that poor girl before they murdered her, the barbarians. They treat each other. They have no value of life. They kill themselves. They're as bad as the suicide bomber's mothers who could care less and send their kids into the street strapped with bombs so that they can get a check. The same mentality is going on in Mexico right now. And we'll see more of this. If you hear one or two stories about humans being stuffed, we're going to see more. And it'll leak out. It's just like everything. We talk about it first here on the alternate underground internet media. I guarantee you in 3 to 4 weeks, somebody's going to be talking about it. And say, did you hear about this story? I don't know if Glenn Beck's still around or not, but somebody's going to pick it up and run with it.
What was interesting from my side, down at camp, because of our you know, being, whether I say well-known or whatever, from time to time we have press people or independent agencies come down that want to do a news article or mm-hmm. piece on us. Some of them are fair, some of them are biased, but normally before they come to us, they go to the Border Patrol and other people so they get more of a well-rounded rather than just what sometimes people label as rednecks or whatever. We had a person down there this weekend. His actual national country of origin is Spain.
Uh-huh.
And he's been to other countries and all that. But it was interesting that over in Europe, as most of your listeners would hopefully know, that, you know, like Steve Klein talks about, there's a huge influx of the Muslims there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally changing their culture over there. And this person came over to, you know, see what we're doing on our borders, because theirs are really screwed up with what they're letting in. For this particular briefing from Homeland Security, he was there, and he was kind of awestruck with this, too. But apparently, from some of the other countries, horrendous things go on over there that we never hear about. You know, press-wise, whether it ever does get out or not, hopefully for your listeners, the people on Liberty Trees, that they understand...
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more happening, more so on the southern border, they would be aware of unless they work down there. I know from time to time Mark Kornke has hammer down on from ACM and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him on, but he's been real busy. He just started another job, and we're trying to work out to have hammer down on here as well, so we're going to work on doing that too. But and I know you've got more to talk about, but I want to maybe we can get into that in the second half hour. I really want to hit this because this and I have a thesis here that they allow something this barbaric to go on can only mean to me that the corruption goes so deep into our own government that they would allow babies to be stuffed with heroin, young college girls to be kidnapped, murdered, and God knows what else, and stuff. That this means they will stop at nothing to get whatever it is they're being granted by the powers that be that are doing this. Satan, the Satanists, whatever, the drug runners. For our government, our regime, to leave that border open and still have this go on is, to me, proof alone that they're in bed with them.
Well, if you look at a couple things, both in Texas and I think whether it's New Mexico or Arizona, not only do they buy people off on the Mexican side as far as, you know, police chiefs, army, whatever, but they also buy people off on our side as mm-hmm. far as police, men, border patrol. Now, for both the police and border patrol, I know that the majority are, in my estimation, heroes, because I'm down there too, and I see what they do and what they go through and how their hands are tied.
Right.
But they do find ones that owe some money on the mortgage, their wife has a surgery, whatever it is, and offer them large amounts of money to turn their back. And in fact, I just had an operation last month over in Arizona in the Sawtooth area. And three different times they saw sophisticated drug running going on. They called BP. BP checked up a point to intercept them. And they diverted from what they would normally do. So either within the agency or, you know, people observe as they have, and this is like the middle of the night this stuff was going on, they had enough intel to divert from, you know, what they were doing to not get caught. So again, on our side of the border, whether it's buying off officials or, you know, people that they have for intel-wise, this is a sophisticated run thing. And as evil and satanic as they are and what they do, yeah. You know, they make a point of getting their stuff through, and if something gets in their way, whether it's killing, whether it's intimidation, whatever it is.
Oh, sounds like we lost you there. Are you coming back? Hello? Let's see. It says you're still there. Okay, we're going to wait a minute to see if he comes back, but I have a comment on that. You know, Minuteman's pointing out that, you know, the majority of the Border Patrol agents are good. I believe that completely. The ones I've rubbed shoulders with, I've known the ones that have died on the border. My focus is more on the higher-ups. He's going to call back in here any minute. If you're listening, Minuteman, please call back in. I think even if you pay off a few border guards, that's only going to help you a little bit. The level of corruption and deception and perversion that we have coming through that border now requires that it has to be at the complete total top. Napolitano, the president, congressmen, senators, people on different committees. I got to turn down my ringer. Sorry we lost you there, Minuteman.
No problem.
Sir.
Anyway, I'll let you...
Oh, I was just going on with it. You know, I was agreeing with you that it's a few in the Border Patrol, boots on the ground, that are bad. But as you go higher up, you're going to see more and more corruption, because they need to have key of payroll for them to get away with this kind of stuff. They have to have corruption on a level in the media that keeps these stories from hitting the people's eyes and ears. I mean, these stories, even if they're just rumors, and I'm not saying that they are, don't get me wrong, Minuteman, but even if they were just rumors, should still be out there in mass. People going, wow. Like, I remember when the beheading started, they were telling us, oh, no, there's not any beheadings, and then what happened? Tons of videos hit that the scumbags made, the drug runners made, beheading each other and beheading people down there. So, then, oh, well, that didn't happen. Oh, problem on the border. There's no violence. And then what happened? Sheriffs started producing videos that showed, yeah, we're getting into shootouts with Mexican soldiers.
It's kind of like with the Snap Latino brothers that kind of like the Indians say, would speak with a forked tongue. Mm-hmm. They say one thing when they know the opposite's happening, and sometimes there's proof of it. Like you said, whether it's YouTube stuff, yet they'll still deny it until literally... it slaps them in the face like, oh, I guess I didn't know that, or, whatever excuse you try to make. But for the general, if you look at the general public on any conspiracy type theory, most of them believe what they're being told by the Department of Truth. After all, they are the Department of Truth.
Truth.
Orwell would
say. Must be telling the truth.
Yeah, as opposed to an alternate train of thought, be it on, the Islamic terrorist massacre of September 11th, be it on Flight 800, whatever it is, most of the sheeple buy into the pablum that they're fed. And that's what's so great about your show, is it gives people the opportunity to hear on a variety of topics something else to think about.
Well, the masses will easily believe that which they wish to be true. It says that in the Bible. People want everything to be nice, and they want their government to be good and under control and protecting them night and day, and nobody good gets hurt, but that's just not the truth. Now, I don't want to be labeled here as just bringing horrific information to the ears of our listeners, and that's why I stopped you before you went on with the second half, and we're not even going to take a break, if that's okay with you. We're just going to continue on. We're not just about problems here at Stronghold Radio and Liberty Tree Radio and here at the Church of Cahuilla. Now, there are solutions. The solutions are doing what Minuteman himself is doing, what I used to do until I moved so far away from the border, are civilians standing up and going to the border and doing what's right. But not just showing up with a camera and a shotgun and sitting in a lawn chair. You have to be more proactive. You have to bring training down there. Now, Minuteman, because of his professionalism and everything, he's got search and rescue training, paramedic training, and, he could go on and on about all the things that he knows. I, to a lesser extent, have it, and other people have got it. When you go down there and you're trying to stop, it started out as stopping illegal immigration. The side effect was stopping slave trading, stopping sex traders, stopping drugs. But there's also another role, and that's part of public safety that a lot of these volunteers serve. They bring these skills. I've known a lot of firemen, paramedics that are also Minutemen, civilians that go and seek the training. They're accountants by day, but yet they go to community college and learn how to save lives. Now, Minuteman, you had an opportunity to do that, and I want you to tell that story now, because this is part of the solution. And this is not just being in the militia, and I'm going to call it that. I know some people hate it when I call the Minuteman militia. And being part of the solution, he's putting his skills to the test, and the best way to do that is go to the border. And I don't care if you're in Iowa, you can go to the border on our southern border and do this. So tell us what you encountered in your tour of duty and your deployment.
Be glad to. Like you brought up, we're not just people down there to, patrol the border. We're there to help, whether it's illegals that have come across that are dehydrated, whether it's some rancher having a problem with, people ripping their fence apart, so we'll go down and help mend it. In other words, we're there for more than just the border part. On Saturday, about 2 in the afternoon, we were about a mile west, Tierra del Sol, we call TDS for short, intersects the border, which is just a common way to get to the main dirt road that runs along the border that BP and everybody else uses. While we were down there, at times radio traffic isn't really clear. You know, we do have repeaters and other stuff, but it's just, there's a lot of hills and stuff, and always don't get the clearest traffic. We heard a radio call from one of our other groups that there was a traffic accident on Tierra del Sol just about, they just said north of the railroad tracks. So they called for an ambulance. So we thought, okay, the person I was with and myself are both advanced EMTs. So we thought, you know, we've got a full trauma pack here. We might as well roll to see if we can help, mainly because some of those areas out there are a ways away from ambulance or fire, you know, services to, before help get there. So we made a rapid roll to the location, got up there. When we got up there, there was one CDF fire truck there and two firemen. My partner and I went up, identified ourselves, told them our level of training, and asked if we can help. They kind of had a relieved look on their face, like, yes, you can help. And so we started working on the head-to-toe survey and checking vitals and stuff. What had happened, there were two elderly ladies
elderly.
Each one had their own cafe and motorcycle. The lady that we were working on was 60 years old. I think, man, that's like my grandmother riding a cafe and motorcycle,
wow.
You know. And there's a section where it goes through like some S-turns up there.
Mm-hmm.
And at one of the S-turns, apparently she was going too fast. About 2 feet off the road, she hit a big rock. The motorcycle flipped and landed probably about 35 to 40 feet from the rock that she hit.
Wow.
She went another 20 to 25 feet and landed in the middle of the road. Fortunate for her, she was wearing the proper type of, you know, coat for people that like to do that fast. Had a good helmet. You know, the boots on, she had basically, you know, cotton 511 black.
So this was a leather, this was like a motorcycle granny with all the gear on.
Except for the pants. She didn't have the fancy pants on. But,
oh, but,
you know,
wow.
She had 511 just, you know, regular tactical pants on, like Levi's, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
But she did have the proper coat on. When we got up there, obviously, with something like that, your first concern is two things, both C-spine and then internal bleeding. Talked with her. Again, my partner and I were helping, assisting, and in some cases, you know, just going right along with what needed to be done for her. A second CDF truck, and the CDF station was probably about 2 or 3 miles away, so they were able to get there fairly quickly. Went through the head-to-toe survey, complaining primarily in the sternum area, did palpation on the chest. There was no apparent signs of broken ribs, punctured lung, or difficulty breathing that way. On the head-to-toe part, leg seemed all right, no deformity there. No blurred vision, no headache, no anything like that. Was able to speak without slurring. Checked her eyes for pearl. Did the thing after we took her boots off where you put your hands at the bottom part of the feet, have her push down, put your hands on the top part of the feet, have her pull up,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that, you know, the nerve connection on both sides of the brain is going down to both feet equally. Had her do the finger squeeze as far as, you know, checking for neurological problems. That way everything was done fine. Talking with her, what we call LOC, which is level of consciousness. She was at LOC 3, where she knew who she was, what was going on. But as is normal, what's called retrograde amnesia, she really couldn't say what happened with the accident, which is normal.
Yeah.
When we, and by then the ambulance was there, a county sheriff in an SUV was there, highway patrol was there. We had two BP vehicles and a BP supervisor there. Got her on a backboard, C-collar, helmet off, checked vitals, ended up, I'm trying to think whether we had to cut her jacket or not, because that'd be expensive.
Oh, yeah.
You do that and that kind of stuff. They got her loaded in the ambulance and was, you know, ready to go. And at that point, we had done all we could. So my partner and I were going to head back to the border. In the meantime, while I was doing some of the vitals and helping with additional stuff, my partner was talking to the BP supervisor on, you know, what had happened and all that. In the higher-ups in BP, there's kind of a stigma about the Minuteman group. You know, those are a bunch of redneck, you know,
vigilantes. Just,
right. And they have, as kind of what they share with the public, you know, you'll never see a BP official, you know, say that they support the Minuteman or Border Patrol Auxiliary, that kind of stuff, because it's politically incorrect and they're literally told from the highest in the feds to distance themselves from that type of stuff. But this BP supervisor came up to my partner, basically said, we, meaning, you know, the we really appreciate you, what you're doing, and we appreciate you being here. And he gave him a hearty handshake.
Good.
And so that was, like, really cool to have that happen. And basically after we had done what we could, because there was enough other help there, then, like I said, we headed back to the border, you know, a little bit more before dinner time. And came to find out from some of our other people who still stayed there that they chose to air evac her out, so in case something did have a complication, because again, we're like 50 miles from San Diego, and I'm not sure what major trauma center would be to the east of us. But anyway, so that's what we did to, you know, try to be of help and assistance to, you know, when needed. We're not there just sitting on the border, like you said, with binoculars looking for illegals. We're also there if someone can use our help, and we can help in any way.
Well,
without getting in the way, we'll do what we can to help a rancher, a stranded motorist, or, you know, someone in an accident.
Well, what I love about this story is it just illustrates. I get these comments all the time when people see me in the forums. They go, you can't be in a militia. You're in California. You can't do anything there. And I'm like, oh, yeah? Where are you? Well, I'm in the middle of Missouri. Okay, well, when's the last time you actually deployed against an enemy or actually went out and helped a civilian or actually went out and aided your neighbor in a time of need? We get to do that all the time here in California because we got the border, we got high crime rates, we got terrible disasters. And I think the border is a huge opportunity for people. And even if you can come down just for your vacation, when I was with the Campo Minutemen, we had a guy coming from Chicago. It would come down on 3- and 4-day weekends. I think he flew into San Diego, rented a vehicle, and came out to the border. And he was a part of a militia there, and he couldn't get any of his other guys to come. We had Colorado militias coming down for their, like, their week of deployment on the border and learning stuff. You know, well, what do we do about this? Because it's completely different than any role that you can imagine. But it also reinforces all of the other training that you've hopefully have been pursuing. And this is not an atypical incident. A motorcycle accident down there is very common. Like Minuteman said, you may be treating... I still remember this illegal alien coming out of the fog and handing one of the Minutemen in Campo a baby who had a severe head wound. He dropped his baby climbing through the rocks to get to the fence and just said, you know, basically through the translator, take care of my baby, and then disappeared into the fog. You know, because the kid could have died. And so suddenly, boom, we turn from... you know, gatekeepers to lifesavers. And
there's an incident in one of the Minuteman newspaper from 4 or 5 years ago, but it still points to the fact there was an illegal coming across who had his leg amputated. I don't mean out there, I mean from prior to that, but in other words, he had one leg and then the two crutches and his girlfriend with him. They were part of a coyote group coming across trying to across the border for jobs or whatever. Because he was slowing the group down, at a hard time keeping up, being on crutches and all that, the coyote decided, you know, I've got to make my pickup point, and I'm not going to do it with you. So he literally left the guy and his girlfriend out there, and they were there for like a day and a half further on. They had no water. They abused all that up, or they didn't leave them with any. And our people found them a day and a half into sitting in the desert, you know, far from a point that someone else other than Border Patrol or us would find them. They gave them water, rendered them aid, made some shade for them, called BP, had BP bring in an ambulance, and, you know, picked them up and took them in the ambulance. But, you know, we're not there just trying to stop them from coming, although that's the important part. But if they do make it over, and they need medical aid or they're dehydrated, we will help them. We're still going to call Border Patrol, but we're not just going to stand and let you wilt like a flower in the sun. We will, you know, lend whatever aid we can to assist.
And what great training this is. I mean, but real-world training. You know, you're getting to actually do some good. I was with the rescue and stuff like that earlier on. I was with an independent group, and we were out south of the Salton Sea, out in an area called Ocotillo Wells. We were tracking about 30. This is back when we could actually detain them and arrest them before California got all iffy and called us kidnappers, but even though it's still the law. But we were tracking a group of about 20 to 30 of them, and we found them in an area called Arroyo del Muerte, the Canyon of Death or the Valley of Death. And they were going the wrong way. They were out of water, and I would say half of them were on the verge of death. The other half needed IVs, and we had limited stuff, but we radioed. We actually got the Marine Corps to come in. They were out there doing something, and they came in quick. And, you know, and it was funny when law enforcement showed up, which was BLM was the first, and then Border Patrol, like, well, what are you doing? I said, well, we came across their tracks, and we started tracking them. Well, why are you doing this? Because I'm a concerned citizen. And it freaked out law enforcement. This is back in the 90s, before the whole Minuteman thing really took off. We were just doing it as a militia. But afterwards, it was funny because they mentioned it in some newspaper down there, and they didn't mention we were a militia. They didn't mention they just said that we were campers that came across them because they didn't want to use the M word, and they didn't want to talk about illegal aliens. And they're like, oh, they were just fortunate. Who, you know, I'm like, who camps in the Canyon of Death? No, we were tracking them. And ever since then, that's when I just had a passion for taking my order and putting them to work down there and doing real stuff for them. Real, I mean, you can't put your skills to a better. I'm a trainer, and I love coming up with the weekend doing search and rescue training with my guys and ladies. But there's nothing better than going to the border and not knowing what God's going to put in your path. And well, I highly encourage it.
It's like with this weekend, and I know you know this too, times people think, well, you're going down to the border and you're going to, you know, see hundreds of people coming across or whatever. Literally, this whole weekend, out of all the teams we sent out, no one saw any IAs coming across.
Yeah.
And Saturday night, we were out at Red Rocks, and the supervisor said they think that's going to be an active area. In fact, when we were doing our shooting training Saturday morning-wise, we could see with our binoculars, we could see three spotters up on Red Rocks on the Mexican side watching us.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you know, they're planning on coming through, and once we leave and they think it's quieted down, there's a good chance they will try to come through there because Red Rocks area has a lot of openings in the fence.
Sure.
Went out there, we had multiple teams around the whole Red Rocks area. If they came through there anywhere, we would have got them. No one came through. So a lot of times when you go down there, you know, you're getting the suntan, you're watching the scenery, and sometimes nothing happens.
Yeah.
But other times, you know, you're able to be effective in stopping. But again, down there doing the training, because a lot of times it's just patience, just sitting there and watching and having the patience to do that.
Learning how to observe, learning how to observe the terrain and use what technology you have. One of the hardest things for me was during the day when you do it, of course, discerning, you know, a human-shaped rock from a human. And everybody, we had one called Mr. Peanut down at Hill 151. Every new guy would call in on the radio and go, no, is it Mr. Peanut? And they'd go, no, it's a rock. Out there with better binoculars, you'd see it was a rock shaped like a giant peanut, and we called it Mr. Peanut. But everybody who saw that rock insisted it was moving, it was crouching, it was zigzagging. And then when we got thermal gear, it happened again. As the sun was going down, it would heat the rock, of course, and there'd be a little bit of a haze. Right. Oh, there's a guy out there about 600 yards, and he's staring at me. No, that's Mr. Peanut. But it was a great humility for me who had all this training to fall. I did the same thing the first time I was there. And I know that it's just like, okay, we always put new guys out there and we train them. Like, you've got to discern a human figure, a moose will trick you. I mean, even if you don't run into medical age, you're going to build skills that you're not going to build going to the range, having a few beers, and sitting around the campfire. And I don't mean to demean it, but I'm telling you what, most militias I meet, that's all they do. They're more worried about the barbecue at the end of training than they are the training.
Well, part of, like you mentioned, places where we actually use, like you said, the lawn chairs, and that's at Campo, what we call the couch position down over there, which is right where the, you know, goes over. And then the other one is in the Jewel Valley where you sit literally almost on the railroad tracks because you've got out a mile or two each direction. If they come across, there's no culverts to go through. They have to go over the railroad tracks, so you can literally sit there with your binoculars and watch. All the other places we go in covertly. We hide, and we're in rocks or bushes, whatever. We can have a good vantage point, but we don't want to be seen by them. We want to see them. So if you don't see any or catch any, the practice of doing covert operations, of quietly coming in, picking a location, being concealed until your time's up, then quietly going out and, you know, go from there. So there's opportunity to practice things, but it's not always every hour to your Kegels. That doesn't always happen.
And let's look at the second tier of training you're going to get, actually primitive camping. Now, I know some of these places are pretty nice, Camp Vigilance, and that one down in Campo, I think they disassembled it. I don't know if the Mountain Minutemen are still there or not. But the Campo site, we were always primitive. We were more like shore watchers. We set up a base camp all right, but you know what it was? It was decoys and fake. Tents had nothing in them. We wanted people to see that and go, oh, that's where all the Minutemen are. And we actually put dummies out in deer hunting towers. They'd get shot at, which was funny, because I'm like, great, I'm not going up in the tower. But we did stuff, and then we were always stealth. But you had to learn how to make, you know, a non-white food for yourself for 3-4. I was down there for a month at a time when I was first disabled a long time ago. And my doctor said, you need to take a break. I said, oh, doc, I'm going to go camping. I didn't tell him it was on the border, and he's like, okay. There's so much. How to go to the bathroom out there now? As far as I know, I don't know if you guys had porta johns. We got rid of ours down there when I was in Campo because the sponsorship fell and we couldn't afford it. Learning how to deal with camp sanitation in a real primitive situation is real world training. And all you little cyber militias, all you guys in cities, I'm slapping you in the face right now. I'm challenging you. Go down there with nothing but a roll of toilet paper and a shovel, and then talk to me about how you're roughing it. When you go to your pre-designated training site every time, you've got your porta-johns, you've got your toilets, you know, go out there and actually rough it, having to sleep on the ground in shifts, having to post a fire guard, because it is too dangerous to sleep on the border. You know, granted, if you're doing it right, you're up all night anyway. They still come in activity during the day. I still remember the best thing, a Border Patrol agent standing there talking to me on Hill 150 Campo going, oh, they never come across in the middle of the day. And I am not kidding. A guy with a Where's Waldo t-shirt walks 30 yards behind us. And I go, what about that guy? He's coming across. And then 12 others followed him across. He was red in the face, that Border Patrol agent. I'm like, what do you mean they never come across in the daytime? Look at right down there. I can't remember the name of the canyon, the truck trail out there. I always forget the names have left me since my stroke. I apologize, folks. But he was like, oh, and then they called the National Guard, and everybody came swarming around, and they caught these 12 people. You never know what's going to happen. I've taken my pastor down and his son down, and nothing happened. We got to see some illegals have a wedding on the other side of the fence. You know where the Mennonites have their mission down there in Campo?
Right.
The Mennonites wedded them and then hurled them over the fence. Well, they got caught right away because everybody saw it. And that was the only thing we got to see. And they're like, wow, it's not as exciting as you made it sound, Dutch. And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. I've been in fist fights. I've been shot at. But in reality, 95% of the time, it's just going to be honing your skills at being a good observer, a good stalker, a good tracker if you're into that. I love tracking. You know, and you got to make sure you coordinate it. You can't just go down there and pick up a place. You're going to mess with the investigations that are going on. You're going to trip ground sensors. You're going to do all that. You need to find a group, and that's where I'm leading to with all of this. I don't know if Border Patrol Auxiliary is actually recruiting, but there are groups that are, and some are harder to get into, and there's a good reason for that. Those are the ones you want to be in. If they're just, you know, Campo Minutemen will just take you and get you started. I'm not bad talking Campo Minutemen. I love them. I think they're great. But they tend to gather some freaks now and again. And I'm going to be at some calls. They're going, hey, why'd you say that? But I like the groups that vet their people. If I'm going to sit on an LPOP, I want to know who I'm sitting with. I don't want some weirdo. You know. So the groups that are harder to get in, you should work towards that. Volunteer with the groups that will take anybody. Get your, you know, some sand in your shoes. And then your goal should be to get with, like, the Border Patrol Auxiliary. I think they're a great organization.
I appreciate that, Dutch, and I appreciate, you know, what you've done, both with the Campo Minutemen and the stuff like that. That, you know, you walk the walk besides talking the talk, and there are people in the organizations I'm with that, you know, live in Sacramento or do whatever. They kind of do like, you know, Steve talks about with Code 20, where they can't always come to the border, but they can, you know, keep an eye on the people at Home Depot on other different things to do what they can. You don't have to live in one of the southern border states to be effective. There are things you can do from multiple locations away from the border to still help with the cause.
I've always been on Adopt a Minuteman. I did it years started. A guy by the name of Bandit, I won't give his name out because I don't know where he is or what he's doing now, and I don't want him to get in trouble. And, you know, people judge you for what you do in your life active-wise. But this poor guy was down there. He's a Vietnam vet, a Marine, recon, living out of a it was a suburban that we called Godzilla. And this guy was eating tuna fish and, you know, and sardines. And that's all he had to eat. So I found a bunch of old ladies in Rancho Cucamonga that were just furious about the illegal immigration. And I said, every month, I'll come by your house and you can round up food, you can round up cash, you can round up bullets, whatever you want, and I will take it to him. The first time I went down there, I brought him enough food to last about 2 weeks. The second time, it was about a month. The third time I went down, we expanded it and we adopted two other Minutemen. Because just these senior citizens in the Inland Empire area of Southern California were just, they were sick and tired of people pooping on their yards and stuff in Ontario and things where the illegal aliens end up. The problem starts at the border, but they end up in your communities. So by the end of it, we were making sure he had gas money, he had clothes, you know, people were taking care of him and things were going great. But then the cause kind of faded. You know, Bush got elected and everybody's like, ooh, wow, this is great, you know. And, you know, the economy started to crash. And so these guys are on their own down there. Not all of them, you know, there are permanent party guys still down there on the border. Most of them are veterans. Most of them are veterans that, because it's BLM land, they can squat for 14 days and they move their, and it's all legal. They have mining claims. They do, there's private property that lets them stay there. You've got to Google these causes. Now, I think it would be great if every time Minuteman went down to the border, we paid for his gas on this radio show. I would love to see something like that. He gives us a heads up and says, hey, I'm going to be heading to Arizona with the ACM. You know, it's going to cost me $1,000 in gas. Well, let's send him a few dollars. You know, make sure that he gets some money to help cover that so you can be part of the solution. I would love to start the Adopt a Minuteman thing, and since you're the Minuteman in the group here, you know, I think we should help him out. So make sure you let us know next time you're going to deploy, and, you know, if we can send you some baked beans, we'll do it.
I will do that, but also to your listening audience, far and wide, since you're on Liberty Tree, I personally know Dutch and his whole family very well and everyone up where he's at. Dutch is really, you know, at times with this radio program, he's putting in food money from the table to make sure this radio station stays up, that this word gets out. You know, if you choose to support a Minuteman, but please first put whatever donations you can make towards, you know, this radio program. Because, you know, the pastor, you know, putting his time in, you know, Steve and everybody else, Dutch puts his heart into this program. Not that he gets anything other than the satisfaction out, but he's trying to keep all of you informed on, to be prepared, whether it's living in caves, your car, having bug-out supplies. You know, make sure that this radio station stays up and on the air, and that he doesn't have to take Sal Lewis out on the street corner every couple times a week to make sure that the radio
station... I'm him out tomorrow.
Lewis is tired of having to go...
and whack weeds for everybody.
Slave.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, tomorrow he's splitting wood and whacking weeds to help bring some funds into the family coffers. So I appreciate those kind words. And I will even pass that blessing and that request up to Liberty Tree Radio. Make sure Liberty Tree Radio gets the donations they need. We're all in this together. And if you're sitting in an apartment somewhere and you've got a few extra dollars, you can do it. We've got people who make this show possible that don't have any money. We live on, and I'm going to tell you this, and you know, most people don't like to talk about money. We live on dollars a month now. $750 a month for everything. Insurances, you know, because they're not VA. They have to have medical insurance, cars, all that. And we make it work. And I know there are people worse than us, and I don't mean to embarrass her, but Olima out there, who has financially supported us in the past, but can't any longer because of just the situation that this economy's in, she archives for us. That is a huge outreach. So something for the cause, and if you're blessed and you have a little bit monetary ability, somebody asked earlier, what do I make the money orders out to? They hate money orders up here in this little bank, so just make them out to TCAK, the church at Kaweah. And since we tithe to the church anyway, we'll use that to tithe to the church. Does that make sense? you know, we'll be sharing the blessing with the church, and then and the money that we would normally, I don't know if that makes sense, but anyway, we'll continue to add it to our tithe, you know, as a blessing for the church, because the more we bless, the more God blesses us, the more we share the blessing, and like we just we don't know how we're going to pay for that. We had a weed eater break last week, and we have no money to pay for it. And I'm not saying this to give you a hardship. I'm to let you know that we're in the same boat you're in. But like Minuteman says, if you enjoy this show, your help is needed. We got people sending us RAM. We got all kinds of stuff. And it's funny. I'm glad you said that, Minuteman, because I've been really kind of feeling like I'm herding cats or sweeping marbles uphill some days. So it's always nice to get encouragement from a listener, a colleague, and a fellow patriot, so I appreciate that. I came at a good moment. I really needed that.
Well, I appreciate that. That's, like I said, I really appreciate you, because I, along with, you know, some of the other people that are your, you know, listening audience and stuff like that, that do know you personally, you know, this is a sacrifice you're making. And I know it's for a worthy cause, but, you know, any help that, in whatever direction, whether they're out primarily with Liberty Tree or you or other stuff, you know, you can't support all the good causes that are out there. There's just too many. But pick one or two that you can effectively put your donations towards. And that's just one of those. I make a donation to every month
that.
Because I truly appreciate what he does. I hope you people do the same.
Well, yeah, I guess that brings us to the end of the program here. Leave it on that note, us having a love fest and telling you we need your money. Relatives that come over, and then they finally hit you with what they're really there for. Well, thank you, Minuteman. I appreciate you. Are you playing music, Lou? I don't hear it. Okay, it's time for us to get out of here. I appreciate your volunteerism, your effort, your sacrifice, your input here at the church, and for the militia up here. And I can't wait to see you when we have our Larry Wick training.
Sounds good. Look forward to it. Take care. God bless.
Okay, good night. Good night. Bye-bye. Thank you for calling in. Everybody, I just want you to hear what's going on, the terrible things. If you just tuned in, listen to it again in the archive or the replay. The things that are going on in Mexico. If you have a militia and you're sitting around the campfire going, Brian, I wish there were something for us to do. I wish this thing would kick off. It's kicking off on our southern border. You have a great opportunity to contact some of the host militias down there, ACM, Border Patrol Auxiliary. There's so many I can't even name them because they contact me and ask me to mention them, and I try to. Do what you can. The clarion call's gone out. So patriots should not be leaving the border states. Patriots should not be leaving California. They should be standing up and